welcome everybody to another episode of Yankees and Gravy. Thanks for tuning in. Been a few days. Tuesday, I don't know. Saturday, like I said before, we're going to try to get to these more regularly. The target will be 2 to 3 a week. I want to be attempting to be at least as consistent as possible. One on the weekend, and then maybe like one on Tuesday or Wednesday, something in that area. But whatever, let's jump right into it. This Yankee team right now has been on fire, playing very, very well, looking good. It's crazy. We talked about it a little bit last time, how they just kind of win and lose in spurts. They probably still are very close to a slightly north of 500 team. But right now, they're not playing like that. They're playing like a really good, a very good team, I have to say. The downside to that is they probably, you know, will go on a little bit of a skid and look like a less than 500 team. But I guess that's kind of how things are looking. I would love to see a little bit more consistency, and I'll talk about a few other ways and reasons why I think there might be some hope for that on the horizon for them. They held on tonight, so that's 5 in a row. And when we're doing this podcast is the 6th, June 6th. You know, they talk about a weak division, and it is. It's a weak division. But it does look like, you know, they're kind of setting up a pretty interesting race between them and the Rays. And I do have to say that for a weak division and a bad division, the top three teams, 1, 2, and 3, which is the Rays, Yanks, and Jays, all have won 4 in a row coming into today. I haven't checked on what the other guys have done yet, but we'll see about that. So that's all three teams winning 4 in a row is pretty solid. And, you know, maybe the division's starting to come together, and maybe it's being facilitated by the, you know, the competition. Hopefully it's heating up. Yankees are in line. I guess the Mets and you know, are a little bit on the weaker side of the division leaders. A couple other teams are like 37, 38 wins, stuff like that. But we're going to keep grinding and hope for the best. Again, I love to see that inconsistency kind of like go away, because that's the type of thing, you know, while we talked about last week as well, you like to see the different types of games they're winning. They're winning the 4-3 game. They're winning the 2-0 game. They're winning the 8-7 game. And that shows versatility. It shows that they can adapt to any style of play. However, if they don't establish some sort of consistency, you know, this streaky stuff is not necessarily going to fly unless we just get ultra hot during the playoffs. Maybe we're getting ahead of ourselves. when the playoffs are a long way away, and there is no guarantee that we're even going to be in the playoffs. So, but that's all I'm saying. If you want to, you know, shape yourself and mold yourself into a team that you believe can win, you want to start now. And starting now in terms of establishing a little bit more consistency, winning series, winning 2 games out of 3, winning 3 games out of 4, string a bunch of series wins together rather than a bunch of sweeps and then getting swept a bunch of times, because then, you know, you're just rolling the dice basically. What a scary game last night. So today was a little bit more of a another offensive explosion early, but you know, yesterday as well. But what a scary game at the end. It's not pretty, but again, it's an example of us winning a game where, you know, should have won. It shouldn't even have been a game. But at the end, you got to think you're going to win. Let's put it this way: if you're Anaheim, or LA, I'm calling them Anaheim. Told you. You guys know already. I'm old. Whatever. I don't even know what the hell they're called. They were called California Angels when I was coming up. And then I think they were called Anaheim. And then I think now, what are they? The Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim? It's very, very confusing to me. So Miami, Florida. The Marlins are going the same route too. Whatever. We know who we're talking about. Let's just call them the Angels. You got to hopefully think you're going to win that game. You don't want to be down, you know what I mean, all those runs, and then only to come back, get within one, and look, they had us on the ropes. And that's the good news you want to take out of yesterday, is Betances really did not have good stuff. And, I mean, if anybody in the league has a chance or deserving to not be judged over a clunker, it's him. Because, I mean, I think he's probably, It's kind of a bold statement, but I think he's probably the most talented baseball player on the team. The guy's an absolute beast when he's on. He started out with a little bit of a clunker, and what you did see that you like is that he did not basically completely implode. You know what I mean? He kept his head in the game, he battled, and he ultimately won the game. What I also like is the reports from the beat writers is that the attitude after the game, it wasn't, you know, it was concern. It was no music, no nothing. It was they obviously know that they kind of handed the opportunity for the Angels to get back into that game, and they acted like it. They showed it. That's the sign of a winning team. That's the sign of a winning team. Girardi was pissed that what you want to do now is be playing well. And last night was an example of a game, an inevitable game you're going to have when you didn't play so well and you didn't close it out like you should have. And it seems like they're aware of that. Versus looking on the other side of the aisle, you look. Trout and Pujols got pulled early from the game. Obviously, you know, the Angels basically threw in the towel. But if you saw them, they look like they were having a blast. Now, I'm all about, it's a fine line here, I'm all about being at the top step of the dugout. I'm all about rah-rah. Of course, you want to have the right energy and enthusiasm. But it was almost like these are two, like, guys who had accomplished what they were going to accomplish for the day. And they were having a fun time laughing, joking, rooting on these little underdog guys that were out there. It just looked like a weird vibe. They were like slapping each other on the back, laughing. It didn't really look like Pujols was paying attention to the game half the time. Now, I like Albert. I think he's usually a gamer and a good guy. And I loved, especially when he showed up Puig nonchalanted that deep fly ball last year and kind of was drifting. Meanwhile, Pujols, who's not fleet of foot by any stretch at this stage of his career, was just waiting to tag, and he tagged only because Puig just wasn't in position to make to set up throwing, and it was just and Pujols was very demonstrative about how he kind of mocked and mimicked what Pujols was doing out there. I mean, I'm sorry, Puig was doing out there, so that he could take that extra base, and he was laughing with Trout, and it was pretty funny, and I liked it. I liked seeing an old school guy, a little bit of an older veteran guy, kind of basically embarrassing this new guy who thinks he's a hot shot and he thinks he's the next big thing in the game, and he basically told him, hey, listen, there's a right way to play this game. I liked seeing that. Where was I going with that? But either way, yeah, back to these guys in the dugout. I feel like they gave up on the game. They kind of like, you know, the type of thing where it's like a All-Star game or a Pro Bowl game when you untuck your jersey and you're just kind of like celebrating on the sidelines, high-five, and that's just what it looked like to me. And to me, that's not what you should be doing in June, in the middle of the season, in a very important game. I mean, they're all important, but it would bother me if I was an Angels fan, is all I'm saying. Let's talk a little bit about Mark Teixeira. What an amazing, amazing year he's having so far, at least from a power numbers standpoint. He's 35 years old. I'm not saying he's, 40, 42 or whatever, but 35 years old is certainly, you start counting down the years as to how many years you have. Bernie was pretty much done by then, wasn't he? But a bunch of guys are done at 35. He was talking like this when he was like 31, 32, how he was stopping working out and this and that. Bottom line is, what I'm trying to get at is that I didn't necessarily think these types of years were anywhere but the rearview mirror for him. I'm surprised. Not surprised. Surprised is the right word. I always thought if he was healthy, he could be a productive player. 25 home runs in that area. 80 RBIs, maybe even more. But he's leading the league in RBIs and second in home runs. I think he's second in home runs, right? And that's like superstar numbers. You always get that every once in a while. It's like every 3 or 4 years, it's like the changing of the guard. Even seems like Cabrera kind of took a little bit of a hit. Now you're seeing all about the Trouts and the Harpers and Prince Fielders and stuff like that. It was like Teixeira was one of those guys, MVPs, tight numbers every year, but it seemed as though those days were pretty much in the past. Fast forward 4 or 5 years, he's right back there again, hitting up power numbers with anybody in baseball right now. And it's good to see. You want to knock on wood, obviously, but the truth is that, you know, he's healthy, and it seems as though this stuff he did in the off season with the diet and with the juicing, the no gluten, the no sugar, the no nothing, the no fun diet, as he called it, really, really is paying dividends. But again, it is Teixeira. My buddy Brendan, he's like, you know, Teixeira, you know, he's doing great, but, you know, he's going to freaking take that inevitable inside pitch off the wrist, and you're going to lose him for the rest of the year. I hope not, man. I really, really hope not, because I like what he's doing this year. It's nice to see. Weird thing about him, I was looking at some of his numbers. You know what's really weird? When he was in his prime, probably his best stretch of his career, you know, he played for four different teams between 2007 and 2009. That is pretty strange. I mean, it's pretty shocking for a player of that caliber. You know, young guy in his prime. We're talking about 2007, so it's almost, you know, 8 years ago, eight years ago or so. And he bounced around four different teams between 2007 and 2009, and even left to one and went back to one. It's a little crazy. It's just kind of like he's not an attitude guy. He's a good character guy. You think as far as what you hear. I know he seemed to get into a lot of spats with these pitchers. He had a few issues. I think a couple of issues with the guys trying to kind of like run on him at first base, and he had an issue with a couple of pitchers that, you know, he think consistently threw inside on him, and he got a little battles, but it didn't really seem like he was like a attitude guy. So it's interesting that he'd be kind of like, you know, thrown back and forth, putting up those types of numbers back then. Another interesting thing about him is his batting average drop. I mean, you're talking about a guy up until 2009, first 7 years of his career, you got a legitimate bona fide 300 hitter. He was averaging plus 300. He didn't hit over 300 every year, but if you average everything together, I didn't even do it. But just by a quick eye test, it looked like he was definitely well and over above the 300 Mendoza line. But ever since 2010, he's been a sub 250 hitter in that area, which is just strange. And you know what it is? He even says it. It's the shift. I just don't know if anybody in baseball, I'm sure there have been, but I don't know if there's anybody that symbolizes the effect that the shift has had on the game more directly than Mark Teixeira. Getting into that stuff, man, I mean, I hate it. You know what I mean? They, back in, you know, it's funny. It's obvious how important good offense is to baseball. And it's just weird because baseball is so reliant on numbers and how you stack up in history and how many home runs you hit and how many, you know, all your on-base percentage and your batting average. And every year, it's like, you know, you compare guys, you know, from nowadays till back in the 50s, the 30s, the 20s. And the only reason you can do that is because, you know the competition level has changed. You know that it's more advanced right now. Just evolution just makes that happen. But baseball is so reliant on numbers to compare eras together. It's just, these are the types of things that affect that, though. I remember back, I don't know what it was. It was sometime in the 90s. This definitely the heart of the steroid era. It just seemed like everybody was hitting freaking 330, 340, even these big houses. Guys, that back when I first started watching baseball in 1980, got a guy, you know, those, first of all, you never saw guys that are like 6'4", 250. My guy was Big Dave Winfield. He was a freak to me. The guy was 6'6", 225 pounds. Now, that's still a big guy today. But back then, that was basically, he was like freaking, you know, Andre the Giant in the league. Now you got, you know, everybody's pitching staff is over 6'6". And even, you know, you see these athletes, the position players, they're not necessarily, you know, they don't have to be the tallest guys in the world anymore, but they're like built like football teams now. But I'm just saying, in general, it's weird that you know, the way stats change, and I just don't like this shift. They obviously, back in the 90s when the steroid era was going on, you saw how important to the powers that be in baseball the offensive numbers. They allowed steroids to come into the game because, and that's the, you know, worst kept secret is that Major League Baseball knew about the steroids. They just looked the other way because they were coming off the strike in, 94? And they just wanted a little something, a little bit more of a pop back into the, I guess, the sexiness of the game. So they let the steroid stuff go on. And then what do you have? You have Mark McGuire, Sammy Sosa, guys like this, Palmeiro, all these guys, you know, one after the other, you know, everybody was doing it. And then all of a sudden, now we got to clean up the game, and everybody's vilified for it. This shift is not much different. You're seeing a guy like Mark Teixeira, who hits, you know, who hit his highest, I think, 330 one year. Now a guy can't hit above 250 because you're letting people play all over the place. I just think, you know what? It's baseball. There's positions for a reason. Let's put these people in their positions, and let's make it an honest game. And you're doing yourself a service anyway because you're going to get some offense back into the game. And, you know, I just think it's weird. You're going to – now you get the managers – It's not a it's complicating the game. You know what I mean? Now you got how important is the scouting report on everybody? And if you want to be a purist and you don't want to switch, you could be screwing yourself up. Yeah, I agree. You have to do it. If other teams are doing it, you have to do it. It is something that I would like to see outlawed. I already talked last week about all these stats and stuff like that. I said last week I didn't even know what WAR was. I know what it stands for, wins above replacement. I always didn't know that. I still don't understand how that's computed or whatever. Maybe somebody could email me at yankeesandgravy@gmail.com if you can explain to me what the hell a WAR is or any of these other stats. I adapted the OPS. That makes sense to me. Slugging percentage plus on-base percentage. And that makes sense. You know what I mean? You got a it's a very viable way to judge the productivity of a baseball player that is easily quantified. I can get with that. But, you know, all these other stuff, you know, especially some of the pitching stuff when I'm reading, oh, this guy's HPC is this guy's, I don't know what any of that stuff means. So, I mean, I don't know. I don't know if I'm going to have to conform or I don't know if this stuff is going to hit some sort of a bubble and it's going to shut down. I don't know. We'll see. Another weird thing about changing of the game is replay. Can you imagine this stuff? It's crazy. Being a purist, you know, I was so refreshed to see that, what's his name again, the manager for the Mariners come out and do one of those old school psychopathic lose your mind type of tirades on the field. You ever see some of those? YouTube some of those if you ever can't sleep one night. Speaking of that, I'll get to what I did the other night when I couldn't sleep. It's pretty embarrassing, but either way. Some of them are more one is more funny than the next one. These managers. Can you guys, I mean, these guys are behaving. You can behave as a baseball manager who's pissed off at a call and wants to argue. You can behave in a way that if you tried that in public, you'd get locked up in a freaking loony bin by the guys with the white coats. It's hysterical. But this guy kind of pulled off a little bit of that the other night. It was funny. But who touched on it tonight? Harold Reynolds, we're watching the game tonight. He's like, yeah, you don't even argue anymore. Gardner, no, it wasn't Gardner. Doesn't matter. Who was it? They when Pujols threw to second when he could have got the easy out at first, and I forgot who it was, but he slid back. And the throw beat him. It looked like he was out, but the second baseman ended up tagging himself just because of the way the bodies were lined up, and it was just an awkward kind of play. And the guy was – I'm sorry about the Facebook freaking alerts. I'm going to deal with that right now. What I was trying to say was that it's crazy that they had they don't – you know, if he thinks he's safe, it's going to be put out there that he's safe. I don't know how I feel about that. How can I sit here and say to you that I don't think it's a good idea that they get the call right? It doesn't make sense. But at the same time now, you're going to see, you know, the guy's like, yeah, nobody – that's the new baseball, Harold Reynolds said. You don't argue anymore. You just point up to the sky at some replay camera that you want you to check. And that's what happens. And then he checked it, and he ended up being safe, and he was – you know, it showed that he was safe, and they overturned him being called out. It's nuts because what you're going to see now is like since that could be so exact, I think there was like a little bit of a gentleman's agreement in the game as ridiculous as this sounds, is when if the throw beats you by a good amount, you're out. You know what I mean? Even if you somehow get cute and beat the tag or whatever, do some sort of stupid maneuver like some bush league. And not even bush league because it's just a natural thing to try to be safe. But That's basically what it's going to be now. You're going to try to get into – you're going to try to slide, and you're going to do some cute maneuver where you lead with your right hand, and then as he tries to take your right hand, you're sliding in, pull your right hand, and then swim over with your left hand and sneak. And you're going to be able to do that every time. So you're going to find that that's actually going to turn into a skill now, how you slide into a base and how you can maneuver when you're beat by the ball, how you can kind of like slither in and slip in underneath the tag, around the tag, or whatever. I don't know. Again, my gut is I don't like it. You know what? Simplify the game. These umpires cannot know every time. Like, you know, if some – basically, that tonight's play was a perfect example. The guy actually was safe. He got a finger in there. But usually, if the throw beats him by a long shot and it looks like he's out, he's out. And the guy – and you'd hear announcers say – well, you know, that's a lot of, you know, that's a gutsy call. A gutsy call. What does that mean? A gutsy call means he was safe, but he looked out, and the umpire just, you know, trust his convictions. I don't know. It's weird. I guess maybe I could be a little bit more, flexible, getting with the times, this and that. But it's just change, I guess. Change always reminds you that, you know, you're aging, I guess. So that's why I kind of remain a little bit of a purist with that stuff. Joe Buck, you gotta love every time you get a Joe Buck Yankee game. Listen, I know I'm a big Yankee fan, and I know I'm a homer, and I know that, you know, a lot of people say this is irrational. My buddy Mike Francesa says it as well. I'm telling you, I don't care what anybody says, Joe Buck hates the freaking Yankees. He roots against them. He cannot hide it. A bunch of people say it. Here's a newsflash to the guys at the Fan. You know, you want to say it's not. You want to say, you know, it just sounds like it. When half the freaking callers call in and say that they're noticing that Joe Buck is sounding and speaking like he hates the Yankees, they're not making it up. It's not. It's one or two guys. Yeah, whatever. But when you can hear it, you know. He had an example of it tonight, and this is kind of a subtle example, but it's an example nonetheless, one of many. He said, what did he say? Oh, because of the score, the Yankees were winning a one-sided game tonight, and then he goes, and this, you know, when the Yankees in the first inning scored all those runs, Gardner came back to the plate, and Buck just says, and Gardner's back at the plate. He's the guy who got this whole mess started. Now, it's not a mess if you're a Yankee fan. If you're a Yankee fan, this is a beautiful game of baseball. It's an offensive performance. But he called it a mess, and then he caught himself. This is what Gardner got this mess started. Mess if you're rooting for the Angels or something to that effect. So, I don't know. I just can't stand listening to Joe Buck. He hates the Yankees, and it's really, really annoying to have to listen to him broadcast baseball games. Let's get into some other stuff. Nova to the rescue. Nova is going to begin rehab this month in Tampa. I shouldn't even say this month. What is he? He's this Monday. He's pitching in a rehab game this Monday in Tampa, and that sets the 30 days. Force these guys to rehab more than 30 days. So as of Monday, he's on a 30-day clock, and then barring something that goes wrong, he's going to be back with the Yankees. He's going to be pitching for the Class A affiliate in Tampa. He has been throwing. He's gotten up to as high as 75 pitches. Nothing really competitive, but he is out there throwing, and our buddy Nova, who we definitely were and do rely on, could be back in the mix very soon. Yankees cut David Carpenter to make room for Tanaka. You know, the other guy in the bullpen is Esmiel Rogers, and it's an interesting thing between him and Carpenter. It's strange because it's only weird because they kept Rogers. They have, for some reason, these guys are like parallel with each other in so many ways. They were born 1 month apart in 1985. That's no big deal, but this is actually the fourth major league team they have both been on together. So these guys are kind of a journeyman-ish, not old, but, you know, journeyman-type guys, you know, hitting right around 30. And they've been on four separate teams, both of them, and they've been on all those teams together. Interesting. Carpenter has appeared in exactly 210 games, and Rodgers 209. Weird. It's just nothing. It means nothing. I don't even know why I'm telling you. But it's just a little weird. These guys, they born within a month apart. They were on the same four teams, bouncing around the league, but they always bounce around together for some reason, and they pitch in basically the exact same amount of games as each other. The Yankees are saying they love Carpenter. They had to get rid of him. He just wasn't pitching well, basically. He does look live. He looks like he's got a live arm. He throws hard, and he's got good stuff. But, you know, there's a lot of people who have good stuff. It's more important to have good outs. But Cashman's talking him up. Obviously, you know why, because he wants to be able to trade for him. But he said something like, you know, he'll do somewhere. He'll do well somewhere. It's just not here. Beltran and McCann, the Foot brothers, they had some foot issues. They were out of the lineup a little bit. They're both backs. Doesn't seem to be anything you know, important. Hopefully it won't linger, but they both look, McCann looks good. Beltran's been coming along a little bit as of late, but McCann's been looking really good. Supposedly he's a little sore, and they've fitted him for some sort of orthotic for his shoe, but they seem okay with them. They both seem okay, and they're back in the mix. Yankees are going to skip the Pineda's next start, which, you know, a lot of schools of thought on that. You know, we're babying these guys too much, and maybe that's why they're getting hurt. I don't know. There's so many schools of thought. I don't think anybody's really quite figured out the mystery of this, you know, all these arm and shoulder and elbow injuries from all these pitches. Seems like everybody's needing Tommy John. I don't think anybody really still has a reason. I don't know if anybody will ever have a reason as to why this has happened. Are they pitching him too much? Are they not pitching him enough? Are they babying him? Who knows? I do agree with this move, though. You're talking about a guy, he's already got over 70 innings. He is our ace right now, legitimate ace. And he's got more innings this year than he has had since 2011, when he pitched like 170 innings. So that's almost half. It's coming up on halfway there soon. He's too valuable, and I definitely could see him needing to kind of – we got to watch that, you know what I mean, for the year. It will be it can generate some debate if he skip a start, he comes back, and he's not pitching up to par. I mean, he's going to – I don't see that happening, you know what I mean? But, you know, these guys like to be in a rhythm. They're creatures of habit. Hopefully he won't be rusty or, you know – and then rusty, because, you know, you say like, so what? He skips one start. Well, maybe he is a little rusty when he comes back. Then when he's rusty, what does that do to his confidence? So it's like a little bit of a chain of events that can lead to – that's what you're dealing with, worst-case scenario. I tend to think it's a good idea. Let's get him the rest. He hasn't proved to be the most durable guy, but he certainly is our best guy. And I guess let's treat him with, I guess, a little bit, you know, handle with caution a little bit. What else do we got here? Stephen Drew, is this guy an enigma or what? He usually, you know, at rest or normal, day-to-day, looks like he is not even able to basically be a major league hitter. To his credit, he has not, which happens a lot, taken these issues out into the field with him, which is great. So, but, I mean, he's up to, and I'll say up to, 170 is a batting average. Girardi's been, I used to think he had something on Girardi, the way Girardi keeps trotting him out there. But he does. Girardi's been, you know, talking about him for weeks about how he's hitting the ball harder. He's just, it's not fault. They're not dropping in. He looks good. He looks comfortable. But how long can you really say that for? You know what I mean? How many good hitters line out also, and you know what? They're out. When they line out, they line out. And they don't get credit on their batting average, but they still maintain that batting average or those stats or whatever it is. He did cite the fact that he's been doing some extra work to tweak his approach. It has been paying off. One thing I will say about this guy, I don't know if there's something about him. I don't know what his deal is. But as bad as he's been, you got to think of like four or five instances where he's single-handedly won games for us. It's so weird. It just, again, it's different than when it just seems like guys are so streaky nowadays. It seems like, I don't know if it's, if what are you going to think? If players are streaking, they can show you that they can go on like a 3-week run where they look like player of the month, and then they can go another Chris Young is a perfect example too. I mean, shows you how much of a mental game it is, really, and it might show you how what it means for the. It might be a statement on the psyche of the ball player of today. Who knows? But Steven Drew has been a reliable defender, unlike Didi Gregorius, who does seem to be kind of coming around a little bit. The Yankees said they were going to be very patient with Didi, and they've proven that they are. And he has kind of, you know, been okay. That play he made yesterday where he dove and basically saved the game by getting that force out. They ended up getting a double play on it, and a run did score, but that out was huge. We needed an out there, and he basically made it happen. You know, going back to this game being very, very mental and psychological, that could be, and you know, mark this down too. That play could be something that they look back at that gets him a little bit back on the right track. I could see that happening. I could see them saying, you know what, that play, he didn't think it was instinctive. You know, the guy's got talent, especially in the field, if nothing else. He made the play, got the out, basically saved the game, went 2-for-4 tonight. We'll see, man. I don't want to jump the gun on it, but, you know, if this guy settles into a decent shortstop, don't be surprised if that night, if that actual play kind of is what's looked back on as the springboard for it. But Steven Drew, man, hopefully he can come around and be somewhat successful as well. It's just great news for all of us Yankee fans to see that there's just at shortstop and second base, they're basically holes. I mean, you know, and we're still playing at the level we're playing. We'll see if help is going to be on the way. Cashman has said, too, that, you know, they're going to look for somebody. I think probably they definitely need somebody. They're talking about needing a right-hander in the bullpen. That's probably something you could add. It's not going to necessarily be, you know, a big deal when they get one of those. It's just going to kind of, you know, they'll find somebody and it'll be like a little bit of a patchwork. Looking at the team overall, though, for the future, the way things can look, and looking at it through the lenses of someone who's optimistic, if you're talking about the rotation, the way it could shape up to look, you're talking about Nova, Big Mike, Tanaka, Eovaldi, CeCe, and Warren. Now, I know I just said six guys, which is also very interesting because Warren has really stepped up. I think we would probably trust Warren a little bit more than we would trust Eovaldi or even CeCe right now, the way he's pitching. And that's going to be interesting because, I don't know, what do you do? Do you put him back in the bullpen? Now, the other advantage to him going back in the bullpen is that he can go in the bullpen. He's comfortable out of the bullpen, and that's what will probably happen. But in hindsight, if you know, to contrast that, if the guy is pitching lights out as a starter and he's a proven starter, and we put him in the bullpen, and CeCe and Eovaldi end up being inconsistent, you know, that's not the right move either. So we'll see. Also, but either way, it's one of those, I guess, good problems to have. You know, the strength of this team is certainly not at starting pitching. I understand that. But if these guys stay healthy and these guys pitch like, you know, on the higher side of what they're capable of, that's a solid pitching staff right there, I'm telling you, with one to spare. I'm telling you. Could have a good pitching staff. So much so that when they do go shopping, that need for that middle infielder or another big bat might supersede the need for another starter. I don't know. I know they say you can never have too much starting pitching, and you don't want to, you know, get you don't want to get false confidence. But again, Mike Pineda, ace. Tanaka, when he's healthy, is an ace. Nova, Eovaldi. Let's just start with Nova. Nova's, wouldn't say an ace. He's definitely number two starter potential. Eovaldi and CeCe, 4 and 5. You know, that's a good starting pitching staff. That's a good starting five. You know what I mean? Ellsbury, looks like it's going to be late June. If everything goes right, it's going to be late June with him. That'll get us that dynamic 1-2 at the top back that'll further well balance this team. I mean, that was great when that was going on between him and Gardner. If we can get that back, that's huge. And then that's what you're talking about as far as needs. That's pretty much it. It's definitely premature to try to talk like we're going to go after, you know, 28. as far as World Series this year, because it is early in the year. I think we all know that at the beginning of the year, nobody was talking World Series seriously. I know we're all Yankee fans. We're all, you know, we watch because we think we have a chance, but if you really had to analyze it, we all weren't kidding ourselves and didn't necessarily think the Yankees had the best chance to win the World Series. But the way things are looking together, you know, it's not necessarily looking like it's a pipe dream right now. You never know what could happen. They just got to keep playing well, stop stringing these big losing streaks together, you know, and just play within themselves. I think Girardi's a great guy to lead this team. I definitely think he overmanages with the bullpen sometimes, but as an overall leader, I like his demeanor. Team's got a good mix of leaders. I mean, how about A-Rod just kind of saying all the right things, being the choir boy as he just, I mean, just bludgeons the baseball record books. He's passing. The names of people he's passing right now is just amazing. And he is, like I said, the leader of this team. He's the default leader of this team, along with guys like, you know, Teixeira and people like that. He's running the show. They all are glowing about how much of a great teammate he is and how much he's willing and wanting to offer advice to everybody. Who knows? It's probably fake as hell. I don't know. But you know what? If he's acting, he's doing a great job acting. And, you know, perception is reality. So that's going to be it for this podcast. I thank you guys all for listening. If you want to make any comments or if you want to, you know, you want me to read a question on the air or whatever it is, YankeesandGravy@gmail.com. Please, whatever channel you're listening through, whatever platform you're listening through, it's on SoundCloud, Yankees and Gravy on SoundCloud. It's on iTunes. If you could subscribe on iTunes, that would be great. I do it through Podomatic. That's what I record. Record it through. So if you can follow me on Podomatic.com, that would be great. It's Yankees and Gravy across the board. I'm also on Twitter and Facebook. I appreciate you guys listening, and we will talk again soon. Go Yankees.